to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 here, the home of the Canucks. I'm Jamie Dodd. He's Thomas Drance. We're live from the Kintech Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. We'll get an update from practice again from Brendan Batchelor here momentarily, but I do just want to mention that it's Legends Weekend for the Vancouver Giants this weekend at the Langley Events Center tonight, November 15th, and also tomorrow, November 16th. It's the Legends of the Sin Bin this time for the Vancouver Giants. Guests include Marty McSorley, Goldie Goldthorpe, Archie Henderson, Richard Brodeur, and more. And you might have heard Marty McSorley on the morning show of Halford and Prof today. So you have a chance to go see the Legends of the Sin Bin at the Langley Event Center tonight, Friday, November 15th, and tomorrow, Saturday, November 16th as well. Again, it is Legends Weekend for the Vancouver Giants. Okay, as mentioned, Brendan Batchelor out at practice at UBC for the Canucks. And when we read you the first update, he said the D pairs were kind of rotating through at the moment. Has a further update now. Not a lot of change. It is Quinn Hughes and Philip Roenick, Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers, Eric Brandstrom with Noah Juulsen. Of course, Vincent Desharnais not present at practice today. So the only change, Noah Juulsen coming in place of Vincent Desharnais on the third pair. And the top pair stays together, and the much maligned right now second pair of Soucy and Myers stays together. And
it's
tough. It's got to be
really
tough.
There's not a lot of change. There's also not a lot of options.
That's the caveat here, right? Because on the one hand, it's got to be very, very difficult to roll out Soucy and Myers right now, given the minutes they're giving you on a regular basis. And I mean, that was a tough night again for Carson Soucy last night. But I also don't know what the obvious changes, well, right? And a lot of people will point to Eric Brandstrom.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one, though. Like, and I'm not saying, you know, you could at the very least, I think, ramp up Brandstrom's minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that to me is the most obvious change this team could and probably should consider making.
It's just, okay, and I know we've gone through this before in the past, but so you do Brandstrom-Myers? Or Brandstrom?
Brandstrom on the right side.
Like, is that, I don't know. It's just,
yeah, no, it's not ideal.
How much confidence are you going to have in that pairing?
What, Brandstrom with Soucy?
Yeah, not a lot. Brandstrom with Myers? Not a lot.
Yeah, I probably have a little more with Brandstrom Soucy, but not when Soucy's been at his form.
That's the thing.
At the moment. And not, that's not like a reflection on Myers or Soucy. It's just that Myers is a little bit more offensive, a little less defensive, mm-hmm, typically. And Soucy, I think is a little bit more, a more natural matchup option, but not at his current form, right? Like, not the way he's been playing, mm-hmm, over the course of the season. I mean, we saw him lose his place on the PK, missed a rotation as they went through. So,
yeah,
you know,
maybe just giving him a chance to reset or something, even, because then they went back to him in the third period and they got back to their normal pairings and everything.
Yeah, I guess the problem with Soucy Brandstrom is without Derek Forbert, you'd have two righties on the third pair,
yeah,
so that doesn't really make sense. So I guess it would have to be Myers. Yeah, and look, there's no obvious solutions here.
No.
You kind of have what you have.
And until Derek Forbort is back.
Yeah.
Because then at least it's like, okay, can you go Forbort Myers, limit Soucy's role a little bit while he figures things out, drop him down to the third pair. It's not sexy. It's not going to necessarily help your puck moving issues, but at least there's some logic to it. It kind of fits the template of what they've been trying to do in the past. With the guys they have available right now, I'm not sure what the obvious solution is. I mean, do you look to a call-up from Abbotsford at some point? Like, we've seen them.
Who? McWard?
McWard. I think Mark Friedman's injured right now,
yeah,
but if
honestly,
he was healthy,
Mark Friedman would help a lot. I honestly think this team could use him, to be totally honest with you. So, yeah, I mean, you could consider it. There are some options down in Abbotsford. Mark Friedman being by far the most compelling of them.
Yeah, and the guy who's played NHL games and all of that.
And helped you stabilize your form early in the season last year.
Yep. A couple of people texting in, why not try Quinn Hughes with Eric Brandstrom? I can see that.
Sure.
I can see that, right? We've talked about the kind of boost that Hughes gets playing with another guy who can move the puck. I mean, obviously, like, you're not going to have Brännström out there for the 20 plus minutes that you have Hughes out there on a regular basis, right? You're probably not going to ask him to increase his role that much. I'm starting to get more and more interested in some version of splitting up Hughes and Hronek, though. And I know all the reasons why they've been reluctant to do that, but we keep talking about how little puck moving there is when Hughes is not on the ice. Filip Hronek is supposed to be, and is, the second best puck mover in this defensive core, right? So do you need to find a way to use him to stabilize those other minutes?
So the problem is, and we saw it last night, right? Like, I think one of my biggest concerns about this team in the early going, right? Real concerns, because I know I've been Mr. Positive to begin the show.
That's you.
That's me. Everyone knows that. One of my biggest concerns is the floor appears to just fall out of this team without Hughes on his game. Like, if Hughes isn't sharp, this mm-hmm. team doesn't seem to have, like, a B game that will play at all. And I do think that's what we saw last night. I do kind of think that's what we saw against Edmonton, too. You know, if Hughes isn't elevating this club single-handedly on some nights, they really struggle to get out of their own end. They really struggle to control play. They can really struggle to manufacture scoring chances or win games, even against inferior opponents or middling opponents like the Islanders, arguably. That, to me, is a concern, big picture, because not only is it a little bit too much to ask Quinn Hughes to be like playing like one of the five best hockey-playing human beings on the planet 82 nights a year,
mm-hmm.
but also because what happens at some point if you have to play a couple weeks without your best player, right? Like, what happens then, right? Do you have something to fall back on from that perspective? And, you know, with the way the Canucks are performing right now, it doesn't kind of look like it. So, you know, if you're going to take Hughes and Hronek and split them up, do you risk mitigating the impact of your best weapon?
Of Quinn Hughes.
Do you blunt, you know, what's been your cutting edge over the course of the season? I would say you definitely risk it. That's definitely something you have to be thoughtful about.
It's a risk. I think at this point, if it's not a risk worth taking right now, it's rapidly getting to that point. Because right. I understand, and I know this is, Quinn Hughes thinks this, right? So that should hold a lot of weight in how we evaluate this.
Yes.
Quinn Hughes thinks that Filip Hronek gets the best out of him and helps elevate him, okay? That's fair. Can you get still something very, very close from Quinn Hughes to what you're getting when he's playing with Filip Hronek and help stabilize the second pair?
So if you put him with Brännström.
Or whoever.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I don't think it has to be Brännström, but.
Well, no, because the argument for it would be, in my opinion anyway, would be if you separate and play one on each pair,
Hronek, Brännström,
does that give you enough yep. puck moving to insulate some of what you have elsewhere? And maybe the answer is yes. I mean, I'm not going to definitively declare what I think one way or the other, but what I do think is that we've seen the trend of the last 3 years has been the old dichotomy of puck mover with stay-at-home defenseman has kind of been detonated.
Mm-hmm.
You need multiple guys that can move the puck if you want to like really accomplish what you want to accomplish at the top of the lineup. And what this Canucks team wants to accomplish at the top of the lineup and does for the most part is like two shots for every one they surrender, two goals for every one they surrender. Like, I don't think Hughes can do that with Juulsen or Desharnais. I don't. Yeah. I think you're asking too much. If you're asking Hughes to be the reason you win most nights, you've got to give him the weapons to make it happen,
mm-hmm.
period. So that's why I just don't think the split Hronek-Hughes paradigm is like helpful, right? Because if this team loses what they have at the moment at the top of the lineup, then maybe I'm not calling them a very good team with the same level of confidence. Like, the reason that I'm still optimistic about this team is that they're crushing teams at the top of the lineup. That requires Hughes, and that requires Hronek. Even if Hronek's defensive game, especially this week, like, what a miserable defensive week it's been for Hronek.
Yeah. Well, and to be perfectly honest, I don't know that he's adding a lot offensively either right now.
No.
Is he?
Well,
and that's why I get...
He's adding to their control. He's adding to their control. Like, as much as you can look at, like, him getting walked by Casey Cizikas and Kevin Rooney in back-to-back games and be like, come on, man. And I think that's relatively fair.
Mm-hmm.
the fact is that what this team's able to control with him on the ice is significantly greater than what they're able to do, than what they'd be able to do with Hughes and anyone else on this blue line.
Yeah, it's probably true. It's just I think Quinn Hughes is so dominant that it can be hard to identify and really zero in on what Hronek is doing in that pairing. But as I said,
he definitely has the best job in hockey.
He has a really good job.
Yeah, no.
That's
question.
One of the reasons that
he's like
have,
me.
That's one. Of the, yes, that's me. That's one of the reasons you have to weigh what Quinn Hughes says so highly. Right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I can't just dismiss that Philip Hronek is bringing a lot to the table when Quinn Hughes is saying he's bringing a lot to the table. I'll admit I'm having a hard time seeing it on a shift to shift basis right now. I think at some point the math equation that you're talking about, right? Like how much do you sacrifice when Quinn Hughes is on the ice versus how much do you gain by spreading the puck moving out more? Like at some point that flips over and it becomes a net positive.
Yeah, but we just kind of know it, man. Like it's, at the end of the day, Hughes has been around long enough now that we've seen him play huge minutes with a variety of defenders, right? Like we've seen him play, we're not even talking small samples. We're talking like thousands of minutes with guys like Tanev and guys like Jamie Benn or Jordy Benn, excuse me, versus what he accomplishes with Philip, Noah Juulsen.
Yeah.
Like we have such a long sort of list of guys that Quinn Hughes has played with, and the difference is stark. It's you know, an extra 10% in terms of shot attempts, in terms of shots, in terms of goals. And you know, I group Hronek in with like Bear. We know what Hughes can accomplish with a puck moving type who's good enough to hold up at the top of the lineup. Hronek obviously is the premium version of that, but this club doesn't even have the Bear stand in for it.
Well, and that brings me to, I think where this conversation kind of logically goes then is we all know they want to add a top four defenseman, but even like when we're just thinking about what the target would look like an Ethan Bear equivalent, I think would make a lot of sense if it allows you to be more flexible and to move Philip Hronek somewhere else. Right. And to have the ability to at least not, even if it's not your first choice, but at least feel like you, it's an option for you to try it out and see it. Right. Like I think because you lay out a compelling case and it's not as if, again, who are you putting Hughes with? Juulsen, Desharnais, Myers, Brännström on his offside? There's no options there that I'm super excited about. And that's probably more, that to me is even more compelling than the, well, him and Hronek are too good together. If there was a really compelling option on the roster, I'd be much more tempted to do it. So I think it's, you have to probably, more so than even just like theoretical top four defensemen, a guy who gives you that little bit of flexibility, it has to be the number one target, right? That you, another option to play with Hughes so you can try out your extremely highly paid number two defenseman on a pair by himself if you think you have to go that way.
Yeah, and that's always been aspirational. How much did we talk about this during the summer, right? The club would love to find themselves in a spot where they could at least consider on a game-to-game basis splitting Hughes and Hronek. They're not there yet. They're not there yet. And I do think that's one of the underpinnings. We talked a little bit about like Marcus Pettersson and his fit with the Canucks over the course of this week, for example. Like, that's, I think, part of the logic too, right? Is if you could get a righty, you know, if you could get an impactful top four righty, doesn't that make a bigger difference in terms of giving you additional flexibility, whether it's to split them or whether it's to give you a second pair driver?
And I even wonder, like, fit has to be so paramount. So if it's a 4-5 righty, you know what I mean? But you're like, but he can play with Quinn Hughes and we feel good about it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Then I think that takes precedence over even like a lefty who's like, you know, a clear cut number three guy, but the fit is a little bit awkward. I think that's what we're seeing here, is that there's just so few options to make changes on the blue line that normally I'm more of a, hey, go out and get the best piece and then you'll figure out how to fit them together. But when you're already in a really tough spot based on your fit for the guys you have, I think adding another difficult fit, hard to fit piece could be really, really tricky. So I think at this point you have to be targeting that guy who could at least theoretically work with Quinn Hughes, give yourself some extra options at the top of the lineup for the blue line. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And just to quickly revisit what else Batch is seeing at practice.
No, go.
Okay. As I mentioned, Miller remains with Suter and Lekkomäki. Pettersson with DeBrusque. Kiefer Sherwood gets bumped up. The old third line from last year of Teddy Bluger, Joshua, and Garland gets reunited. Danton Heinen, Atu Ratu, and Nils Hoglander skating on the fourth line. Haven't seen any announcements about roster moves or guys getting sent down or called up or anything like that from the Canucks today.
Danton Heinen played very few minutes last night, too. Mm-hmm. He was one of the guys who seemed to be, I don't want to say singled out, but who certainly seemed to pay some consequences for a miserable Canucks performance in game, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think he was last among all Canucks players in 5-on-5 ice time. So he goes down to the fourth line. Kiefer Sherwood gets the promotion to play with Pettersson, which was inevitable. This club was always going to show us that at some point. I don't know. That third line to me had some moments. Maybe a week ago, like on that California trip where it was looking really, really strong. But I feel like they've had a kind of, they'd kind of had like three or four games where where it felt like they'd kind of hit their level and mm-hmm. they weren't as impactful on a shift by shift basis. Obviously, the Miller line stays together as they sort of try and create presumably like a comfortable debut environment for Lekkomäki. I think that's wise. I think that makes sense. And then obviously Joshua and Garland, I mean, you were going to go back to that.
That was going to happen eventually.
You were going to go back to that as soon as you could.
First sign of trouble, really, yeah.
Yeah, I'd still like to see Pettersson center it, but then who does DeBrusque play with?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. Well, the other potential surprise, now it got wiped off the board, right, but the Ratu turnover, and I don't want to signal him out on that goal.
That was
a team effort.
You could play Yakety Sax over that.
That really was.
When that goal was called back, I was just like, I've never seen a goal called back that a team deserved to have nullified less. You know what I mean? Like, because yeah. It's almost a shame. You play that badly in the defensive zone, like, you deserve to get burned.
You don't get punished.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was rough. But I was wondering if a demotion could be in the cards,
yes,
for Ratu, and right, you bring Baines back up, and then the only thing there is it necessitates then moving Pugh Suter back to center. But for right now, at least, Ratu remains playing down the middle. And, you know, Ratu, I mean, yesterday we didn't really talk about it, but Rick Tocchet raving about his work ethic, right? The work ethic that he's seen from Ratu. And obviously that's going to go a long way for a coach like Rick Tocchet with a young player. But you do want to see some bottom line at some point, even playing the minutes he's playing in. It's great that he's a centerman, that he can win faceoffs. There hasn't been a lot there, though, beyond that, kind of the substance of it for Ratu. So not that he's like the major problem or anything, but I was just kind of thinking, okay, if you're looking for ways to tweak things, that could have been an option for them today.
He hasn't played fabulous hockey, though.
No.
I mean, what I'd say is, you know, this team is still shy, probably another bottom six winger, right? Or bottom six center.
Mm-hmm.
They probably are short that player, to be totally honest with you. I think we're kind of seeing that, you know, for all the Hoglander discussion, you know, Hoglander playing with Ratu and Baines, it's like not exactly a position where you're being put in a place to succeed,
mm-hmm,
necessarily. That's more a like, can Hoglander drive with a pair of guys that, you know, haven't exactly established themselves as full-time NHLers. And he wasn't able to, by the way, and that's okay, because that's a pretty tough assignment for anybody. So, yeah, I mean, is Ratu a full-time fourth-line center option? Is he at that level yet, given what this team wants to accomplish with their bottom six on the ice? I think that's a fair question.
I think the clock is ticking pretty fast there on that.
His performance needs to answer some questions
in
that respect.
Yeah, clearly. And again, it's Pugh Suter is playing up the lineup right now, so are you saying, okay, well, we'll keep Ratu there for now because we want to play Pugh Suter at wing?
And Pugh Suter has to stay up the lineup. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. You're watching star-level forwards for the Canucks end up... So when I say the wrong side of the puck, I literally mean that the body is not positioned between the net and the puck in a 50-50 battle. If you go watch Sasha Barkov play, he's a genius at it. There is never a moment in any phase of the ice where his body position doesn't remain between his net and the puck itself, or at least his opponent. And the Canucks, Like, star Canucks wingers, we're messing that up. It's not a simple detail. It's tough to do in 50-50 battles, but you have to do it, especially on the half wall clearing the zone. Repeatedly, the Canucks wingers were messing up the breakout, which I think is partly why I'm not sharing the, like, Susie Myers panic today. Because the breakout issue, honestly, to some extent, was not on Vancouver's, like, plotting defenders last night. It was a team-level issue. It was an issue when Quinn Hughes was on the ice. It was five men all messing it up consistently. It was real bad.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's plenty of concern to go around for the Susie and Myers pairing.
Yes.
But yes, there were other major issues last night as well. But look, I think it's a tough look when you're like, okay, we all know with Susie and Myers, the puck moving is not going to be elite. It's not going to be exceptional. But the trade-off is, okay, but you're going to win all those net front battles. You're going to keep guys to the outside. You're going to do that. Well, they're not doing that right now.
Well, they're not consistently, but for the most part this season, I think they've been okay. It's just that it doesn't matter if you're spending that much time in your own end of the rink.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if you're elite defensively if 80% of the time you're spending on the ice is in your end.
It just starts
honestly,
to look,
it doesn't matter.
It starts to look really ugly, though, when you're having when you pair the puck moving problems with the getting beat at the net front.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, that's when it starts to look like it looks right now. It's like
the
thing you're supposed to be really good at. It's like, it's one thing to go through a stretch where you're struggling at the flaw in your game. You know what I mean? Like, even that dips below the baseline that we saw last year. Okay, that's kind of understandable. But then the supposedly really solid part of the game falls off, and all of a sudden it looks like a mess in a hurry. Okay, we'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in here. We will be joined a little bit earlier than normal. Our guy, Dmitry Filipovich, host of the Hockey PDO cast. He'll join us in studio. We'll look ahead to next week. A couple of games coming up over the weekend, and then into next week at the Canucks' upcoming opponents here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We're live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at dunbarlumber.com. Dmitry Filipovich, host of the Hockey PDO cast here on Sportsnet 650, in studio to join us, rolling his chair over, his office chair over, as we speak. What's going on, Dmitry?
Oh, is the mic on?
Nope.
Absolutely not.
It is not working.
Now it is. We're getting a thumbs up.
Now it is.
There
Yay.
We go.
There All right. Go. Very, very exciting.
What an operation we got here, fellas.
Look, two mics, very straightforward. Three, ooh, big challenge, big technical challenge.
Once Three you guys, that, two mics.
Once you add that third mic into the mix. What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Tom and I were watching the football game last night.
Yeah.
And while we were watching it, the hockey was on as well on another TV, and we were just remarking what a fun week of hockey it's been. I feel like every night there's been really fun games going on.
Sure. So. Not for the Canucks fans last night.
No, I certainly
but some
wouldn't
other
say
exciting
that.
Games.
But otherwise, around the league, it's been a pretty fun slate.
The Florida Devils game, the second period of which I was able to watch out the side of my eye.
Sweating Noah Brown, 5 catches.
Hey, you know what? So, a couple thoughts on this. First of all, that was a great second period. The Devils are terrifying. They just skated the Panthers off the sheet. I don't think I've seen that Panthers team skated off the ice in a long, long time.
Yep.
And then watching the Canucks with a little bit more intense focus. I will say, like, so I don't often watch Canucks games at the bar. I know our listeners, for our listeners, this is probably a much more common experience. But football and hockey go together so well because you can focus on the hockey and then just look over at the football game
between the play caps
for a half second. Honestly, it's not an experience I've had because I usually am just like watching Canucks games so intently. Loved it. Now, I didn't like so much the fact that every time I looked at the hockey game, the Islanders were just forechecking the Canucks into oblivion. Mm-hmm. But so it goes.
It happens. Or at least it did happen.
Yeah, I mean, when you run into an unstoppable force like the New York Islanders, there's only so much you can do.
So I think the Islanders are good. I'm calling them playoff caliber. I think they're like an LA Kings caliber playoff team. They don't have the superstars. They're not a real threat to win the cup. But I think their record at the moment undersells who they are. I think most of their struggles have been isolated to special teams. And I expect a lot of that will be fixed by just having Matt Barzal in the lineup. So I'm picking the Islanders to be pretty good over the balance of the season. You're buying or selling?
You're picking them to be precisely the eighth best team in the Eastern Conference for the seventh straight season?
Eighth, maybe?
They're 100% not going to be higher than seventh.
Okay, but they might be higher than eighth.
I actually don't think they will, because if you look at it, the four teams in the Metro have solidified themselves up top with the Rangers, Hurricanes, Capitals, and Devils in some order. In the Atlantic, you've got the Panthers, the Lightning, and the Leafs. And then after that, the eighth spot's wide open. I actually think the Senators are my team. Similar to what you're saying about the Islanders, I think their underlying profile is significantly better, actually. Surprisingly, they haven't really been scoring at 5-on-5 despite the personnel.
Every Senators game, they outshoot their opponent 36-18 and then lose 3-2 in overtime. It's wild.
Yeah,
that's like the reverse Canucks Travis Green.
Yeah.
Where they would get outshot, but Demko would get them, or Markstrom would get them the win.
They definitely are, after 16 games, something like 12-3-1 on the deserve to win a meter scale.
Well, I cautiously say this because we've been down this road with the Senators for a long time now, where everyone gets excited, usually before the season actually starts, and then they start playing games.
Not me, baby.
I know, I'm just saying universally, I feel like in hockey circles, we've been doing the same song and dance.
The objects in the rearview mirror are closer than they appear?
Yes, but you watch this past week of hockey in particular. I know they blew that game against the Flyers last night in overtime. The shots were 27-4. You thought it was bad being a Canucks fan watching last night. The Flyers were getting outshot 27-4 with like 2 minutes left in the second period.
Incredible.
And they wound up winning, of course, because it's hockey. But this week, the Senators went into both Boston and Toronto and skated them off the ice. And we've been waiting for this kind of changing of the guard in the Atlantic. And I don't want to pronounce that it's happening because it's still so early in the season. And I think the Leafs in particular aren't going to have that happen to them that often against the Senators. But that Bruins team, we've been waiting for the Bruins to fall apart. And I think it's finally happening. They got absolutely demolished by the Stars last night.
Yep.
They've had so many stinkers this season. I see no reason to believe they're going to turn it around beyond the fact that
they're the Bruins.
It's the Bruins' black magic. But if you're a Canucks fan listening to this program and you're feeling somber after watching
your team
last night,
this is very generous of you.
This is just an exciting development.
At least you can be happy with the downfall of others.
I can't give you a Canucks win, but I can sure give you the downfall of the
like
Bruins.
Just the nature of following a sports team is they're going to win rarely, but the teams you hate are going to lose a lot.
That's right.
So you got to be able to take some solace in that at some point.
It's pretty easy to be a hater in today's world.
So easy and so fun.
Well, and hating on the Bruins has not been like a profitable or satisfying exercise for like 15 years.
Yep.
And so for Canucks fans, enjoy it while you can.
Well, I think it's going to happen for a while based on the roster construction of this team,
Maybe.
I mean, what path do you see the Bruins to get better beyond Justin Brazeau continuing his glow up towards the best power forward in the league?
Realistically,
you don't see it.
No, I don't see Brazeau becoming the best power forward in the league because
second best.
Yeah, because Mikko Rantanen exists. Here's the thing about the Bruins, man. At some point, they're going to have three straight picks in the first round and they're going to nail all three. That's the Bruins story.
Yep. Last night, Tom made a comment about Jake DeBrusk, and then I was like, wow, you're really letting Senishin and Zboril off the hook here.
Yeah, seriously.
He was the good pick.
He was.
Yeah. He was.
Yeah.
The one that worked out, anyways.
Yep.
Okay. What do we do in this segment again? All right. We talk about the Canucks opponents. I like to
welcome
just,
to Bruins.
I like to just vibe out sometimes. Yeah. I'm like, this is good. Anyways,
I think we should just vibe out, and
it's
we can
the last
also talk
of
about
the week. Of course,
no.
The Canucks are playing Chicago.
We'll do a vibe sandwich.
What
here.
Are we gonna?
No. We'll vibe a little bit at the beginning, then we'll do a little bit of what we normally do, and then we'll vibe a little bit at the
it's
end.
Like, it's like he offered me a vibe sandwich. I almost punched him in the mouth.
All right, Connor Bedard and the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Have they, like, how is the operation don't be embarrassingly uncompetitive going for the Chicago Blackhawks this year?
I mean, I'd argue they've been more competitive this year, especially in Bedard's minutes. I think people have been left some wanting more because he set the bar so high last year, and in particular, he hasn't really been scoring to that level himself. If you look a bit closer, though, they're winning his 5-on-5 minutes this year, which they actually weren't last year, even when he was producing. So I feel like they've taken a step in terms of that competency factor that you just mentioned. You look around, though, and a lot of the moves they made in particular were bringing in all these guys who are theoretically going to play with him, right? Bertuzzi, Hall the year before, Foligno.
McKayev.
None of those guys are actually playing with him.
Yep.
Like, he's playing with Donato and Kurashev. And so, you know, it's a pretty uphill climb for him to produce given the caliber of players he's playing with. I still think he's must-watch. Unfortunately, they just don't have the puck that often. You watched that game in Seattle last night, and they were similarly stuck at like 7 to 9 shots for more than half of the game. So it's not ideal, but I do think that Connor Bedard is fully worth all the hype. And if you're looking for a reason to watch the Blackhawks, he more than fits the bill.
They played really well in that game against Vancouver at the top of the lineup only.
And Lankanen was really good in that game.
Lankanen was fantastic. Yep. But everything they were generating, and Bedard, Teravainen, Foligno outplayed the matchup that Vancouver had on them. It's pretty rare, too, that we saw it last night, but we don't often see, and we saw it against Edmonton and New Jersey, but we don't often see.
What's the.
and Carolina. We don't often see Vancouver get throttled at the top of the lineup. That's sort of where their bread is buttered. Bedard actually managed to do it, and given that the other teams that kind of have our who's who of the contender tier teams, that stands out to me as like one of the major takeaways. I know it's going to take Bedard's Blackhawks a while to be properly imposing, but this guy's already impacting the game like an elite player.
Yep.
Period. I don't care that the production isn't there. The two-way stuff to be at that level at 19 in the NHL, insane.
Especially so without good. The amount of attention he gets every night, right?
Is he a, this is totally out of left field, but is he a must on Team Canada for you?
I think so.
Yeah.
Especially since I feel like a lot of the Four Nations talk right now is around how it's sort of a stepping stone to the Olympics as well, right? Like it's going to kind of forecast. Obviously, there might be some players who make Team Canada that don't wind up in a couple of years being at that level still. But I feel like a lot of these young players are going to get these opportunities because it's sort of the natural progression towards the Olympics, which is the ultimate goal.
At the very least, make him your 13th forward because it's going to matter that he gets blooded against best-on-best comp.
And you want to see him get to actually play with other top players in the world because I feel like
Crosby,
his skill set is going to thrive in that setting.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. He should be on it for sure. And that's a good point, too, about like, okay, the players will be taking this tournament seriously, but it's also not the Olympics. So you may as well do a little bit of internal development there
for sure.
And bring him to that one. Nashville Predators. Mm. What, like, how concerned should the Nashville Predators be about their start to the season?
I mean, deeply. Like, a lot of the conversations.
Are they still the worst points percentage team in the league?
They're tied with San Jose, I believe.
Yeah, it hasn't been great. A lot of the stuff that we've talked about, the Penguins, their struggles, I feel like apply on a slightly lesser scale here.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, it looks like all of a sudden a pretty slow team that's really struggling to like transition back defensively, and they're getting burnt there by their opponents. It's a shame because last year they were such a fun story, and the reason they were so fun to watch was they were winning all of these sort of like effort-based metrics, right? And they were just working so hard. Everything was adding up to be greater than the individual parts. And then they went out and spent a bunch of money on slower, bigger name players who essentially took away that essence that made them special last year. And so they really have moved away from that. They're not getting any production out of all those guys they invested in. I haven't checked yet. I'm not sure if Marchessault has been on the ice for a 5-on-5 goal this season.
Wow.
He wasn't up until a couple of days ago. He might have gotten one recently. Brady Shea has quickly vaulted himself into arguably the worst contract in the NHL, in my opinion. Like, he has been a giveaway machine, really struggling. And Stamkos, I'm not surprised. He was the beneficiary of getting the best passes in the world from Nikita Kucherov on the power play last year. He was a non-factor of 5-on-5 all of last year, and that's carried over now. So, yeah, I think they have to be kicking themselves at the direction they went to go in, the way they spent their money. And we've already seen Barry Trotz come out and essentially say that if things don't turn around, I think it got blown out of proportion that they're going to rebuild because financially I don't think they can at this point.
But, what would
but they're
going
to start promoting younger players from their AHL team, which is once again one of the better ones in the league. So we'll see. A couple of weeks from now, they might just start infusing some of these young guys and might get back to the playing the way they did last year. But for right now, I think they're very easily exploitable.
I think there's such a fascinating cautionary tale about one of the most important things front offices can do is not just like scout the rest of the league, but understand either why you are having success or aren't having success, right? Because it was so easy to look at them last year like, hey, this young up-and-coming team, we took a really big step forward, made the playoffs, let's go out and spend to take that next step. But as you said, the spending they did just didn't fit at all with the identity they forged last year. And I mean, I remember even watching them in the playoffs against the Canucks, like all about the super quick ups, right? Yep. Like pushing the pace, and then you go out and bring pieces that don't fit together with that at all, and this is the result.
Well, I get the logic because you watch that series, and they got their share of opportunities, especially as the series went along. They just didn't really have a lot of finishing talent beyond Philip Forsberg, and so I guess the logic was, all right, well, let's keep playing this way. We've got this infrastructure, and let's add a few shot makers, and Stamkos is certainly still that, even at this point in his career. The issue is that he slowed them down so dramatically that they just don't really resemble that team. And then now all of a sudden that foundation they thought they had in place just doesn't exist anymore. So yeah, I don't really see their play turning around here beyond like major lineup moves. And we know that organizations are generally pretty reticent to A, admit their mistakes, and B, take away the minutes of a guy like Stamkos or even potentially bench him for a while because we just spent a bunch of money and you know who Steven Stamkos
is. He's a big name.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the young players wind up getting punished by Andrew Brunette, which is incredibly frustrating because guys like Philip Tomasino, who for some reason the organization just refuses to play, is probably one of their more encouraging players, but they wind up punishing guys like him and Luke Evangelista instead of the actual culprits.
On Tuesday, the New York Rangers come into town. The Rangers are obviously a heck of a test for this Vancouver Canucks team. I mean, you lose to Chicago, I don't even want to know what the conversation is going to be like in this market. You struggle in any way against a Chicago-Nashville twofer over the weekend. I think this market's going to be pulling their hair out to the point that everyone looks like I do. And
oh, what a nightmare. That's just Drance doppelgangers walking around.
Everyone just cackling like a gremlin. Yeah. It's a bad scene. Canucks better get some wins this weekend. Anyway, the Rangers roll into town. That's a legitimate elite team, probably the last one that the Canucks face this month. Why are the Rangers so good again? Are they even more dangerous this year than they have been in the past?
I think so. I will say, though, their defensive play has regressed quite a bit over the past, I'd say, week or two, and they've been relying on Shesterkin once again to an alarming degree.
Stuff?
Well, yeah, I mean, early on, their 5-on-5 play was so improved that you were thinking, all right, we know how good Shesterkin is. Mm. We know the power play is going to be elite. If they have this 5-on-5 backbone as well, all of a sudden, they're pretty flawless. We've seen a little bit of that regression. So once again, I think the theme here for the stretch of games we're highlighting is it's a get-right spot for the Canucks offensively in particular. Like, I feel like there's going to be opportunities to attack off the rush, create some easier scoring opportunities at 5-on-5. And so, yeah, I think this is a good spot for them to figure some of that stuff out that's been lacking over the past couple games. If not, we're going to have what Drance just said, which is a very, very scary situation.
Terrifying situation.
Yes, that no one wants.
What's gone wrong defensively for the Rangers?
Well, it's interesting. At the start of the year, they went away from their usual defensive sort of pairings, right? They split up Fox and Lindgren. They put Keandre Miller up on that top pair, and they were delivering fantastic results. Then Lindgren came back, and they essentially went back to their previous construction, and those pairs have struggled. Yep. And so we'll see. I think they've shown already the blueprint for what should work. I think considering they've already banked a bunch of points, and I think they feel pretty confident they're going to make the playoffs, they're going to use this regular season to try out different stuff and experiment and not necessarily show their best hand in early November. So I think eventually they'll figure that out. But for now, until they make that adjustment, I do feel like you can attack them offensively.
So what are we going to draft, boys? I don't have an idea.
Uh-oh.
Which means we should
You're usually the idea guy.
Which means we should probably draft something silly since I don't have an idea ready to go. What do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always down.
Should we draft stuff to put
oh
in?
Oh, boy.
Should we draft stuff?
Should we draft stuff?
First pick.
Couches.
Hard pants.
What's crazy is that if I'd finished that sentence, it actually was going to be more unhinged than just stopping at stuff. Okay, why don't we draft non-playoff teams among the teams in the top eight of each conference at the moment? Which
so
team
teams
will fall
to fall out?
Out.
Yeah. Okay. Regression.
Wait, teams to fall out or teams to work their way up?
Teams to fall out.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Because it's
okay.
Easy to pick the teams that are like Colorado. Great.
Of course. Okay.
That Colorado
now,
is the number one.
And are we using points or points percentage?
Points percentage, of course.
All right.
The only just official measure of who's in the playoffs and who's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course. I wasn't being sarcastic.
No, I know. Point percentage is the only one to use.
Yeah, I'm not a crazy person.
No, the whole market. Vancouver briefly was in first in the Pacific Division by point percentage this week, and all of a sudden everyone's like, first in the Pacific by point percentage after getting mad at me for years on insisting that we should use it.
Have you been getting a lot of why aren't you as critical of the Jets this season as you were of the Canucks last year?
I'm not.
Okay, I have not been getting it.
Okay, but for obvious reasons. One, the Jets, the Canucks were on a historic PDO heater. The Jets aren't even first in the NHL.
Yep.
Two, the Jets are 15-1. Of course what they're doing is unsustainable. Or 15-2 now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, regression.
Here you go.
Regression.
The wheels are falling off.
Yeah.
No, but truly, they're not even first in the league. Like, they're a 102.9. The Canucks we were talking about last year were at, like, 105.
Yeah.
For much
even
of the year.
Even more than that.
106.
Yeah.
They were at, like, 105 by Christmas. And then they, like, ticked up. They had that game against the Senators. Everyone go look up the Canucks 5-0 win against the Senators if you want to know what luck in hockey looks like from last year. Unbelievable. It's still funny. We're going to watch it at the break.
Speak for yourself.
We're going to watch it at the break. I'm going to make you sit through it. Clockwork Orange style.
Yeah, was that the one where, like, I think they actually scored on their first shot, but the scoreboard hadn't reflected that they'd gotten a shot yet?
Yes.
And so they had that screen grab where it was Canucks 1-0 on zero shots?
And the first one was the miss wide, well high, and bounces, like, right as a sitter in the blue paint to Pew Suter. And then, like, I think they scored two off of like, direct stanchion bounces. It was incredible stuff. All right. Dimitri, you can start us off.
So from either conference here, we're doing.
Don't minimize it that much. I can't even see any of the teams anymore.
So you're looking outside the top eight.
No.
Or inside the top eight, excuse me.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I have to go with the first pick here, the Calgary Flames, who are tied with the Edmonton Oilers right now in point percentage for seventh in the West. But Colorado's coming. You can see them on their tail there. So give me the Flames the first
pick. Slam dunk.
Slam dunk.
First pick for Calgary, barely holding on to that final playoff spot. I know you guys were hyping them up earlier, but I'm going to take the Ottawa Senators just by virtue of them being the Ottawa Senators, who I believe are like eighth in points percentage in the East right now, if I was counting it up correctly. So they're just a hair ahead of the Islanders.
Ahead of Thomas's Islanders.
I'm not ready to throw dirt on the Bruins just yet.
Okay.
I'm throwing dirt on the Bruins. Anyway, whatever.
They're the Ottawa Senators.
But I'm buying stock in the New York Islanders.
So I'll take the Ottawa Senators to fall out.
I'm going to pick the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Ooh.
They are way too dependent on Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews is out still indefinitely. We still don't know when he'll be back with that upper body injury. I'm not buying it. I'm watching this team play. They do not look as like skilled and interesting as they have in previous years. I think there's... When you're relying a little too heavily on a player who's injured indefinitely and Anthony Stolarz, I'm picking against you. And I like Anthony Stolarz. Mm. All right. So Toronto is one of my picks. And then
starts to get tough.
I'm agonizing between the Kings and the Capitals. And I'm going to pick the Kings. I'm going to take the Kings here. Because I kind of buy that Calgary has some staying power. I kind of buy that the Kings have some staying power, too. I don't actually think they're going to fall out. I probably made the wrong pick, but whatever. I'm going with the Kings.
The Capitals they've built themselves a pretty nice cushion.
Now
is the
they're,
only thing.
Now they're, though, the 105 PDO team.
Yes.
They are the far greater regression risk than the Jets.
They are. I'm going to go. This is tricky.
That's why I should have picked them. Damn.
I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm. Wow.
Just they're a little further down the standings. There's always the age concern, injury. You never know.
No,
I don't love that pick.
There's way too much.
But there's no good. There's no good picks. So I'll take the Tampa Bay.
There's way too much dog on that team.
Yeah, that's probably
true. They're going to make the playoffs. But once again, at this point of the draft,
they do need a right-handed shooter so desperately, though. I saw it's now Mitchell Chafee in the Stamkos spot.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yesterday, I was watching. I was just like, so we've reached the Chafees who were trying in that spot.
How is Daniel Sprong not on that team?
Honestly, it's wild.
It's baffling.
Baffling. He'd literally already have 25 goals.
He'd be Steven Stamkos.
He'd have 25 goals and be minus 15. It would be amazing.
Yeah.
All right, wrap it up for
one
us
more
here.
Pick.
Damn, one more pick.
Unfortunately, I have to do this to you guys. The Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, wow.
I mean, look at who's left on the board. What do you want him to do here?
So everyone, no one's taking the Capitals?
I think the Capitals are good.
I think the Capitals are
good. Yeah, I don't want to. And they're 700 points percentage right now. They've got such a cushion.
I'm not picking against Alexi Protas. He's way too cool. Just is what it is.
Yeah, there's not a lot of vulnerable teams. I mean, we've been talking about this all week. Like, it's November 15th, and you can predict with a lot of certainty at least
like seven in each conference
of the playoff teams right now.
Yeah,
tough spot.
Very tough.
All right. Dim, wearing the black hat today, picking against the Canucks. Picking the Canucks to fall out of the playoffs.
Please don't remember that. Remember what I had to say about the Boston Bruins earlier
in
the segment.
Right.
I was much more passionate about that. This was just purely a logistical thing. I'm burying.
Sometimes you just got to do it.
I'm pouring all the sand we can find, everything, all the dirt on the Bruins.
I love it. All right, he's Dmitry Filipovich. He's the host of the Hockey PDOcast here on Sportsnet 650. We'll take a break. Final segment. Brendan Batchelor joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strance. We are live from the Kintech Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Final segment of the week here on Canucks Talk. Going in to a busy weekend for the Vancouver Canucks. Of course, they're hosting the Blackhawks and the Preds back-to-back Saturday and Sunday. They practiced today, hoping to engineer a rebound from that ugly one last night at Rogers Arena. For more on that, what he saw at practice, and everything Canucks, he is the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, our pal Brendan Batchelor. Batch, thanks for making some time for us today, man. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
We're doing well. It's almost the weekend, so that's always very exciting.
Speak for yourself. I'm doing terribly, Batch.
Well, of course, that goes without saying.
I have been deeply outworked today. I'm soft. I've been too soft this season.
Too soft.
Rick Tocchet today said that he's been too soft this season, and you know what? That applies to me too. I haven't been nearly negative enough. And I think the team's struggling without stuff to rally around. So
you got
to
give them some bullets.
Truly, I think we all need to up our game here in the city right now, Batch.
Are you going to take questions about individuals or no?
Well, will you take questions about individuals?
I'll always take questions about individuals because I believe that that's what accountability looks like.
I'll be perfectly honest. I was hoping for a goofy Drance game today, so we didn't have to talk too much about the game last night. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see what we can do. But I'll ask a big picture one. Was that the worst performance of the Tocchet era in your eyes?
Ooh, I don't know about that. I mean, it wasn't great, but there have been some other ones. Like, I think the Oilers game wasn't great. I hearkened back to that Seattle game.
Yes, that's the one.
Yep.
That's the winner.
Yeah, like,
that was
one where, like, Rick Tocchet has told the story many times that, like, they got back from Seattle that night and Adam Foote had to talk him down as they were walking back to the hotel on a street corner in downtown Vancouver in the middle of the night because he was all fired up and sort of had to give him the, we just got here, calm down, we got a lot of work to do, don't overreact to it. But, you know, it's not often that Rick Tocchet gives a press conference like he did last night. So it's certainly in the conversation, but I don't know if I put it at the top of the list.
Do you buy that there's something about home cooking this season for the Canucks, or is this just random?
It's so hard to say. I kind of do, just because if you look at the common denominator between all of the games that they've really struggled in, they've been at home, and the stretches where they've found their game and played well and strung games together, like that California road trip, we're all on the road. So, you know, whether it's subconscious, feeling a little bit more pressure when they're in the market because of the success they had last year, you know, whether it's something to do with all the new guys getting used to their routines playing at home, whereas regardless of what team you're on, when you go on the road, you're on the road and that's your routine. And that doesn't change regardless of whether you're a Canuck or a Predator or whatever other team you might be playing on. I don't know. I know you think it's more likely coincidental than anything else, Trancer, but I'm not sure. It's kind of hard to put my finger on, and you'd like to see them put together a run of really solid home performances so that that's not a narrative that we have to talk about going forward, because this is a team that was so good on home ice last year, and obviously that's going to be very important for them down the stretch and into the postseason at the end of the year.
I just think, who've they played on the road?
Well, yeah, you look at their toughest games have come at home.
Yeah,
like Carolina, New Jersey, Edmonton, those are the three best teams they've played.
I think it's far more likely to be a quality of opponent issue.
You played Florida, but at the same time, they were missing some of their top guys. So, yeah, you know,
and you needed overtime to win.
That for sure. Yeah.
It's not like it was a regulation win. And then they did have a tough performance on the road, but it was against Tampa, right? Like, I just think they haven't played anyone on the road yet.
Yeah,
that's kind of my
view. I can buy into that too. I could say a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, I think.
Always splitting the baby, King Solomon.
It's called nuance.
Yeah, no, I don't like that at all. I've tried nuance before. It doesn't
How
work
dare
for me.
I not have
don't
a
care for
definitive
it.
Definitive hot take.
Yeah. Two things can be true at the same time, like Batch, no changes to the defense pairs today. Did that surprise you at all? Not is that the right call or the wrong call? Not even looking for that level of editorial. Just, are you surprised that ultimately it's just, you know, the reunite Joshua and Garland thing and elevate Kiefer Sherwood and sort of that's kind of it. Nothing on the back end in terms of meaningful alterations of practice today. Did that surprise you?
Not entirely, because I think as much as we see the pairings in practice and, like, I say this all the time. It's bad for my brand to say this because I'm the Lions guy that tweets the Lions. But the lines that they roll in warm-up and in practice are less relevant than maybe they ever have been in the NHL in terms of actual deployment. And, you know, it's not like, you know, Hughes and Hronek are attached at the hip and are out there on every shift together, right? Like, we saw a lot of different combinations as the game went on last night. So I'm not entirely surprised. Rick Tocchet has always been more quick with the trigger finger in terms of changing the forward group than he has with the defensive pairings. And so, you know, I was expecting to see movement in the forward group, and I wasn't, you know, as surprised to see Joshua back with Bluger and Garland, because I think that's sort of a baseline that Tocchet went to last year, regardless of what was happening, that line, or at least Joshua and Garland stayed together while everything else would move around. So now that he's got Joshua back, it doesn't surprise me that he goes back to that. But in terms of the D pairings, you know, I guess it'll be, the only thing is, it'll be interesting to see what Desharnais' situation is. Tocchet said after practice that he tweaked something and they don't think it's serious, but they thought it was better to keep him off the ice today. So whether that holds him out of the lineup tomorrow and Noah Juulsen gets a chance to come back in or not, I think remains to be seen. The only thing I'll say in terms of deployment is I would like to see Erik Brännström get some more minutes and some more responsibility based on the way that he's played for the most part. And, you know, if you were going to look at a change on the back end, I wonder about putting Brännström in the top four and giving him the opportunity to either sink or swim in that role with some of the struggles that Carson Soucy has had early in the year. But at the same time, as I said, you know, we see all sorts of different combinations and pairings as games go on anyway. So I'm not sure it's that big a deal. beyond looking at the minutes at the end of the night and who's playing more and who's playing less and how that's trending. And that hasn't really changed a whole lot, at least from what I've been tracking.
Well, and I wonder how much of it, especially with the blue line, is just the lack of obvious options, right? Because you can throw things out there and like, hey, try Branstrom on the right side with Soucy, or hey, try playing him with Hughes on the right side. But there's always a pretty compelling counter argument to any of the other configurations you want to throw out there, right? So as much as I understand it, right, Soucy and Myers, they're having a bit of a tough time here this season. We're all seeing it. I also don't know what the obvious really, really good option is if you want to go away from that.
Yeah, my only thought is you move Branstrom up, you move Soucy down, and it's as simple as that. And you say, okay, Branstrom and Myers are a top four pairing, and Soucy goes with Desharnais or Juulsen or whoever it's going to be on that third pair. And you see if that gives you a little bit more juice, having a puck mover and an offensive guy like Branstrom playing a bit of a bigger role. But at the same time, I think Tyler Myers can sometimes be that guy, and to have two of those guys on the same pairing, you know, leaves some questions about defending. And obviously we know Rick Tocchet likes big guys that can cover space with their reach and their length in the D zone. And that's not how you would describe Branstrom's style of play. So, yeah, I mean, is it possible that he will look at some of these changes and that there will be tweaks going forward if things trend in the wrong direction? Yes. But at the same time, ultimately, that defensive group played pretty well against Calgary a couple of nights ago. So I don't know if you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater because of one bad night.
With the Canucks getting outworked by Bo Horvat's New York Islanders team, do all the people who've been talking about Bo Horvat's country club leadership owe us an apology?
Well, maybe the Canucks need to shave all their beards and cut all their hair short. Maybe that's what's missing from the, you know, the Lou Lamoriello school of thought. Yeah, I mean, like this is we talked about this on the pregame show yesterday too. You know, Reach sort of brought up the fact that, you know, there's lots of things that have happened since Horvat left, and you can sort of draw a line between the club's trajectory from Horvat departing to them figuring things out and being a playoff team last year and having a strong start to this year. But my response to that was that direct line is also correlated to when Rick Tocchet arrived. And we don't live in a world where Bo Horvat played under Rick Tocchet. So, you know, was there a country club style atmosphere around the team prior to Rick Tocchet's arrival? I think to a certain extent, there are fair comments to make on that. We know that, you know, even within the organization, there were people that thought that at that time. But to hang that on Bo Horvat, I don't think is fair. And the fact that he's gone to another market and has sort of solidified himself as a leader and a fan favorite and someone there that the fans are talking about as someone that maybe should have a C on his jersey, I think speaks to the character of Bo Horvat and what he was all about. It's just unfortunate that his time in Vancouver coincided with a pretty dismal era in the club's history. And, you know, I'm not going to completely absolve him of blame because some of that is on him, right? But at the same time, to sit here and say, oh, the club figured things out as soon as Horvat left and that's why, is entirely unfair to him as well.
Well, and I think the most interesting part of the Horvat angle for me from last night is you look at three of the last four home games, right? Last night against the Islanders, Saturday against the Oilers, and then go back before the road trip to the Devils. In all of those games, there were extra reasons for the team to be excited and to playing with intensity, right? Last night, it's Bo Horvat, your former captain, is back, but also Dakota Joshua making his debut. On Saturday, you've got a rematch with the team that eliminated you from the playoffs. And go back to the Devils game, it's Hughes, your captain now, playing against his brothers in the NHL. And in all three of those games, you give really disappointing performances. Now, did they get outworked to the same extent in those first two as they did last night? No, but still pretty disappointing flat performances. Are you worried about that at all, that like small pattern of three games here that I just laid out? Or is that just kind of, again, as Drant said earlier about the home record in general, is that just kind of randomness? Or do you think there's something concerning there about kind of an inability to match the moment in some of these home games?
I think if we were having this conversation about three games in March, I would be a lot more concerned than I am about three games in October and November because, you know, first of all, early in the season, things like this are more likely to happen. You're still working into the year, getting used to your systems, getting used to the level, getting used to new players on your team, like just in general around the league, right? We've seen a lot more lopsided wins and high-scoring games in the last 3 or 4 weeks than we'll see in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. So, like, if this is a trend that continues or if it's something we're seeing late in the regular season when you're ramping up for the playoffs, that's where it's concerning to me. At this point in the year, it's still a team trying to find its identity and trying to work through some issues, I think, and that's entirely natural. I mean, look at the Edmonton Oilers and the way they've started back-to-back years. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, you know, it matters much less how you're performing in October and November as opposed to how you're performing in March, April, May, and, you know, hopefully June for one of these years for the Canucks. So,
yeah, but they have Connor McDavid, man.
You know,
like that guy, yeah. Did his 1,000th point in like 600 games. Dude, it's insane.
Yeah. No, exactly. But so basically all of this to say, like, if we do like the old 650 worryometer, it's pretty low on like a 2 out of 10 for me on the worryometer. But if it continues, it ratchets up. And if it's later in the season that we're seeing a trend like this, then it ratchets up even more.
Yes.
Because ultimately, when you're a team that, you know, performs at the level that the Canucks do, regardless of whether you have a night off here or there, you know you're going to be a playoff team. So what matters is, are you peaking at the right time? Are you playing well in March and April? And so there's nothing you can do about that in October and November except to try and work towards that and try to find some more consistency in your game. But that's something that's always going to take time. So I'm not concerned about it yet. And I think it's also a good sign that, for the most part, they haven't strung those negative performances together. Like, you know, you talk about them in the sense of them being three of the most recent home games, but there was a road trip in the middle where they played really well. They had a win against the Flames the other night, too. So we're not talking about, you know, as Rick Tocchet sort of hinted at, that if you don't nip these things in the bud, you have 3, 4, 5, 6 game stretches where you're losing and being outworked and not playing well. And based on the track record of this team, I would expect that they have a pretty good bounce-back performance tomorrow against the Blackhawks.
Yeah, that was a point we were making on the first segment was, you know, even that Edmonton game or the Carolina game or the New Jersey game, like, it didn't look like an effort issue. You know what I mean? Last night looked like an effort issue, but I don't know that I'd say that about any other even lopsided Canucks loss over the course of the season. So it's hard for me to get too bent out of shape over what I see as a one-off.
Yeah, I think that's a completely fair way to characterize it. And, you know, do you want to have these sort of lopsided losses? Absolutely not. Do you want to have them on home ice? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, you know, what are we today? November 15th? Like, we're not even at American Thanksgiving yet. This is still a team that, you know, what are they, 8-4-3 now? They've got a really good record. They're on track to have a good season. And I know in this market, you know, people live and die with this team to the extent that a loss like that, like, changes everyone's mood in the city on a day like today. But we do have to remember that at the end of the day, it's 1 of 82. And if they have a good weekend and win a couple of games here, everybody will be flying high again on Monday.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the lopsided wins, though, Batch. Like, they've gotten them against the Ducks and the... Who else did they beat lopsidedly? They beat the Ducks.
Flyers 3-0.
I guess so the Flyers, the Ducks, and the Blackhawks. Excuse me. But where are lopsided wins? That's the weird thing that I can't kind of square is, you know, I feel like the Canucks have really only beat one playoff caliber team in regulation in the Kings, and when they do win, it feels like they're squeaking them out, and when they do lose, it looks a little more decisive than that. There's something about that does concern me just a little bit. Like, just as we're building this sample and figuring out what this team is, you know, like, they have a negative goal differential. I know they've won 8 of 15, so they're a game over 500, however the NHL decides to count it. But it's always a bad sign to me, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Batch. It's always a bad sign for me when your floor is low enough that you can get blown out, but your ceiling doesn't seem to be there that you can blow out other teams unless they're truly one of the bottom five teams in the league.
Well, my response to that is I think it's pretty clear we haven't seen their ceiling yet. And there's a number of reasons for that. You know, I think, look at the Calgary game as an example. What was one of the talking points coming out of that? Everybody was saying, man, they look like a completely different team when Pedersen and Miller are both going.
Right.
Mm. Well, Pedersen's had a slow start to the year, and Miller's been banged up. So neither of those guys have been clicking on all cylinders at the same time, save maybe for that one game. And you see how big of a difference it makes. So that's sort of where I diagnose it or pinpoint it, that, you know, whether it's because of an injury to Miller or whatever Pedersen's going through, whether it be injury or crisis of confidence or however you want to describe his relatively slow start to the season, ultimately, if those guys can figure their individual games out, can get healthy, they drive the bus for this team in a way that, you know, obviously Quinn Hughes does as well, and he's the biggest factor. But when those guys are pulling on the rope as hard as they can as well, it makes a massive difference for this group, and we just haven't seen them do that yet. Now, it's only, what, 15 games into the season, so, you know, there's plenty of time to trend in that direction, and as I alluded to earlier, ultimately, you know, none of it matters unless they can peak at the right time in April. But, you know, I agree the lopsided wins aren't there. I guess what I would say is that you hope that they're coming, and you hope that Miller and Pedersen can be greater driving forces for this team than they have been to this point in the season, because that's what's going to make the difference and turn this club from a good team that's trending in the right direction to a legitimate contender like we all thought they would be coming into the year.
Batch, appreciate it, man. Thank you for doing this. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Okay, we just have a few minutes left, but I want to hear at least a little bit from Rick Tocchet, who spoke after the team practiced at UBC today. I think some interesting comments coming out of that, so don't think we'll have time to play the whole thing here, but let's at least hear a little bit from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
No Lankinen today?
Just a maintenance day.
How about Desharnais?
He tweaked something. I think he'll be fine, but it was better to get him came off the ice today.
Yesterday, how you just wanted to see things change following last night's game, whether that's practice, morning skate. How did you see the difference in this morning?
No, guys are attentive. It's, you know, we got to work on certain things, some more details. You know, we got to stop the guests in our game. The guys know. I mean, I don't know. You know, they knew. They're pissed too. It's just not me. So it's you know, we're here to stop trends. When you're trending in the wrong direction in some parts of your game, stop it. So if you're circling too much, stop circling. If you're not going through people, start going through. It's I know it sounds simple, but it really is simple. Stopping trends. It's just simplify your game.
I mean, your first month or two in charge, obviously there was a lot of teaching and a lot of change. Have you gone through this with this team? What you're going through right now?
Like last year?
Yeah, like they've gotten away from their identity and home ice.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, sometimes you get a little comfortable, and, you know, that's my job to make, you know, I want these guys to feel comfortable, but play uncomfortable. And that's a sweet spot we're trying to find right now. You know, we just cannot accept these home game efforts. It's, you know, there's a game plan there, and when, if the other team, you know, gets a goal or something bad happens, we revert to one-on-one hockey again, and we got to stop that. And I think that's a trend that we have to stop.
How do you know as a coach, because I remember you've said you can't be on them all the time.
Yeah.
So how do you know as a coach how much slack to give and when to kind of drop the hammer?
Well, I think I've been too soft this year. That's the first time I think I've ever said anything. It wasn't even that bad. Our efforts aren't good at home. Accept it and move on. That's the way we got to look at it. And we worked hard in practice today. Focused when it's time to focus tomorrow. We got two games in 48 hours. A lot of things can change. My job is to get their energy level. I think we do. Talk to some players. They got some good energy today. Got a hard-working team coming in tomorrow. And we got to just be ready to play.
What's the thinking?
That is a little bit of what Rick Tocchet had to say after his team practice today. And yeah, the headline quote there, as you alluded to off the top of Batch, I think I've been too soft this year. So the disciplinarian version of Rick Tocchet may be in the offing for the Canucks if they don't turn things around.
That's sometimes how it works, right?
Yeah.
You see if you can delegate responsibility.
You want it to come from the players, but at a certain point, if it's not, then you have to intervene.
Yeah, exactly. And so, well, you know, that all seems healthy. That's fine. Well, look, this team's got two cupcake matchups against teams at the very bottom of the Western Conference standings this weekend. We could be singing a very different tune on Monday,
mm-hmm.
or at least the market could. I think we shouldn't overreact too much if they beat both Chicago or Nashville.
If they, like, it's, as you said, they've only blown out decisively teams yeah. that aren't in the playoffs, but there is even a quality of blowout against a bad team that still makes you take notice.
It'd be nice just for the home fans to throw a party this weekend.
Man.
Just go make
yeah.
Rogers Arena party. That's kind of on this team to do. Anyway, we could be talking very differently, but these are two games where you'd expect the Canucks to win and win decisively.
All right, have a great weekend. Enjoy the games. We're back Monday here for more Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.